Hey, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Monday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky, Kyrie Irving is off the market. What comes next as the Lakers get near the deadline? That's next on Locked On Lakers.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everyone for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, sometimes Saturdays, and even on Sundays, Andy. No rest on the Lord's Day when news happens. The Locked On Lakers on YouTube is also where you can go to see the show. Appreciate the 11,000 now subscribers that we've got as the channel has just grown and grown and grown. Tons of activity over the course of this week, between the Lakers and the finishing the road trip, and then all the stuff around Kyrie. Just a great place to talk to other Laker fans, talk to us. The Kyrie stuff was fascinating in terms of the reaction to the trade demand and now going forward with Kyrie off the market. So that's where we're going to start, obviously. On Sunday, it was announced that Kyrie Irving will be traded to the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks are giving up a first-round pick, 2 second-round picks, Spencer Dinwiddie, and Dorian Finney-Smith, who is considered to be one of the better up-and-coming young defensive wings in the league. So that's the package that they got. Let's start here, Andy. Before we start, I do want to let people know that today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. The first time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with the promo code Locked On. That's prizepicks.com, promo code Locked On. I thought this would last a couple more days. Wouldn't have minded that from a traffic standpoint. It's good for business, but Brooklyn got this done quickly, and it came together quickly. And like before the weekend was even out, Kyrie was on his way to Dallas. Were you surprised first that it happened so fast, and then we'll talk about the destination?
Not really, because I figured it's either going to be we trade him, or we call his bluff. But if you're going to trade him, I feel like you're better off just getting this done and just being over with, because it's probably something you want to do pretty well. I mean, the Nets by now know the Kyrie experience, and they may like, as much as you could call his bluff, and if they really did not get offers that they liked, I'm sure, given what we've seen with Joe Tsai, in particular, how Joe Tsai, their owner, relates to Kyrie and the Lakers, which is something we're going to discuss. But we've seen that he will call bluffs. He called Kyrie's bluff earlier this offseason. He called Kevin Durant's bluff earlier this offseason. But once they opened up shop and saw that they were getting good offers, it doesn't surprise me that's like, just get this done so we can figure out the rest of what we want for the deadline. And clearly they want to try to remain competitive, try to keep Kevin Durant engaged and committed. You're better off giving yourself more of an opportunity. So no, it's not that surprising.
Yeah. And I also feel like too, they had a pretty good idea of what the market was going to look like. I mean, because so many of these conversations had at least been started in the offseason. I think they knew kind of what they wanted from Dallas and what Dallas could give them. They obviously knew what the Lakers had available to them to make a trade like this work, and apparently tried to squeeze even more out of it. The Lakers said no, and we'll talk about that as the show goes on. I think the key to what you're talking about too is, the Lakers made the offer. They made, the offer that could be done with the 2 first-round picks. Their commitment level to Kyrie is something that we can get into, but it's not like they were holding back and, trying to get this done for one pick or whatever. The Nets knew their offer. If you want to stay competitive now, Finney-Smith is, fills a role on that team in terms of a really good defensive wing and a guy that people believe can become a really good 3-and-D player. And Dinwiddie's a 20-point-a-night guy. He's inefficient, and he is not Kyrie Irving in terms of offensive talent. But he's still a quality player in the NBA. The Lakers,
and somebody they knew, somebody yes. They already knew as well, because he had been part of the Nets' original culture that they tore down in the, you know, KD, Kyrie mm-hmm. era.
Yeah, I actually saw a really funny tweet where somebody was like, a rendering of what Spencer Dinwiddie would look like in a Nets uniform. It was just a picture of Spencer Dinwiddie playing for the Nets. But like, the Lakers can't offer that. The Lakers could offer Russell Westbrook, who is not a player that the Nets wanted, and the picks. That's the only way to make that work financially. So if the Nets really wanted players, the Lakers would have had to involve a third team. People look at San Antonio and Jakob Poeltl as a, but that starts Toronto. Getting really complicated. It gets complicated.
Yeah, Toronto is a possibility where Fred VanVleet would get routed to Brooklyn, and I actually heard Gary Trent Jr. as a possibility to the Lakers. You know, like mixing and matching all sorts of different stuff. But the more you involve other teams, the more, as you said, complicated it becomes. Toronto, it still seems like, based on a lot of different reports, hasn't quite decided yet what they want to do at the deadline. It's funny. There was a report from Shams Charania from The Athletic that the Nets, you know, in addition to wanting those two firsts from the Lakers, which the Lakers were, by multiple accounts, willing to give up, they also wanted Austin Reeves and Max Christie and pick swaps on different picks. And like, at some point, that's just, for F's sake, man. Like, that's ridiculous. That is putting aside, you know, that's them moving in a completely different direction, because that's them not being as competitive immediately. Unless they turn around and flip some of those picks for somebody else, they're putting themselves in a position of less immediate competitiveness. That's just too much.
Well, I think the argument becomes much. From them at that point, like, yeah, we won't be as competitive, but it's such a good deal. Yeah, you know, we get the two good young
players. No, I mean from the Lakers' perspective.
Right. No, I'm saying from Brooklyn's, to give up. From Brooklyn's perspective, I understand. It's like, okay, it's a bit of a shift here, but we get so much stuff here that it's worth doing. And, you know, KD will be happy and will give us flexibility and all that. But I agree with you. Like, at some point, the Lakers just like it. And what's funny about this is you mentioned Joe Tsai and his special treatment of the Lakers. We talk a lot about the Lakers tax and that there are teams that don't want to deal with the Lakers, don't want to feel like they want to improve the Lakers. I've heard versions of the Lakers tax expressed in the context of teams knowing that, you know, they might have Rob Pelinka himself kind of over a barrel in terms of his security in LA, although that might have changed a little bit with the extension or whatever. This was much more a Kyrie tax. There is no bleeping way we are going to send Kyrie Irving to where he wants to go after what he has done to our organization over the last couple seasons. Three seasons? I forget what exactly it is. We're not doing that. Like, unless we get so much stuff that it would just be stupid. And that's what they were trying to extract from the Lakers. Mark Stein reported this. Like, Joe Tsai was not going to send Kyrie where he wanted to go. He'd send him other places, obviously, but he wasn't going to reward him with his first choice unless the deal was just so ridiculous. And, you know, Rob Pelinka and the Lakers were unwilling to cross a line, both in terms of stuff they were going to give up. And what I think is fascinating too, and something what we can get into going into the next segment, reportedly the Lakers were willing to give Kyrie the 2-year extension. They could acquire him, sign him basically almost immediately to a 2-year, something like a $90 million extension, 90 something million dollars, but not the 4-year, almost $200 million.
Which would have been a wink, wink. It would have been a wink, wink agreement. They could not officially do that.
Correct.
But it would have been a tacit understanding of, you are bypassing this 2-year extension because we have all agreed on a 4-year max extension, sight unseen, after all of Wave's arms around.
Right.
Which, I mean, in our Kyrie mini show, I made it very clear, and this was something I talked about for 3 hours, filling in on Mason and Ireland on 710 ESPN. I would have been willing to take Kyrie as a rental, even if it was an expensive rental, because if you really think Kyrie makes you a front runner, you can make an argument that it's worth a pick or two to be a true front runner. I would not have been comfortable at all with a 2-year extension. I would not be comfortable with any long-term commitment to Kyrie, but I could see how the Lakers could essentially just write that off as the cost of doing business.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought here, because I actually feel like the Lakers went into this with about as aggressive a position as could really be had. Because my feeling about the two-year thing was a little different than yours, and I think it's indicative of sort of where they were willing to go, where they were willing to stop, obviously needing to stop. And then really importantly for the Lakers, what comes next? Because this changes the trajectory of both for this deadline and going into the summer of what might be available to them, assuming that Dallas gives Kyrie what he wants, which is the long-term extension and stuff like that. And if they don't, it means things have gone horribly wrong, which means I don't know why the Lakers would want him anyway. All of that coming up next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by PrizePicks. Laker fans, if you have not signed up for PrizePicks yet, you are missing out on Daily Fantasy Made Easy. PrizePicks has the best NBA DFS prop game on the market, more NBA props than any other DFS prop operator, superstar players, bench players. Just pick 2 to 6 players and predict whether they will notch more or less than their PrizePicks stats projections. And you, in this process, can win up to 25 times your money. PrizePicks offers projections on everything from NFL, Super Bowl coming right up around the corner, to women's college basketball, even disc golf. Use the award-winning app on both the App Store and Google Play. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. Safe, fast withdrawals. Download the PrizePicks app or go to prizepicks.com. Sign up, play daily fantasy sports. First-time users, you can get a 100% instant deposit match up to 100 buckaroos with the promo code Locked On. Do not forget to enter that promo code Locked On at the sign up. That's how you get your instant match. If you're not playing Prize Picks, you don't know what you're missing.
So there's like a, I think most people like have heard this sort of like comparison to the story, however it is, like the headline, a woman who votes for leopard eats people's faces party, surprised to find leopard eating her face. Kyrie Irving, to me, had
we're not supposed to do politics, Brian.
I know, I understand. Kyrie Irving, to me, has a very strong leopard eats your face party vibe. At some point, he is going to eat your face. He ate the face. He ate your face in Cleveland. He ate your face in Boston. He ate your face in Brooklyn. And he is going to eat faces in Dallas at some point. The question is, can you do enough winning before he gets around to eating your face to make it worthwhile? And the Lakers, I feel like you can look at it and say this year and next year. I'll give it this year and next year. Anything after that, you're like, we are really looking at, and now the, keep in mind, he's over 30 years old now. Everywhere you go, he is more likely, because he's going to be harder to get rid of now. If you sign him to a 4-year contract, it'd be much harder to get rid of. He's going to have time to actually stand there and chew your face off before, you know, as opposed to just get flesh wounds. Now you're faceless. I feel like the Lakers, with a 2-year deal, which they apparently, you know, reportedly were willing to do. Sam Amick at The Athletic reported that. The Lakers have made it pretty clear, I think, what they were willing to do to, I think, fend off the criticism that they were unwilling to make a move, basically because of LeBron, and we'll talk about that too. I think that's a pretty aggressive move. I think it would have made a lot of people uncomfortable, the 2-year firm commitment at $100 million, basically. But I could live with that. Like, I said, you know what? I could live with this. 4 years, I think, is crazy because it goes well beyond the you know, your commitment to AD and LeBron. But 2, that lines up with everyone. It's not so odious. And the difference between, say, Irving and Westbrook for that kind of commitment is that Irving is a much better player. And so I feel like, okay, it's a year more than I would like, but you can't do it for less than that. Kyrie said no. Kyrie wants the 4 years. I don't blame him. He wants to get paid. Fine. But that can't be the Lakers' full consideration there. And they certainly can't give them all the stuff that they, you know, reportedly were asked for by the Nets.
No, as I was saying before we went to the break, I would have been more concerned about the length of commitment than what the Lakers actually gave up in this deal. Like, within reason, you don't want to just rake yourself.
Well, I mean, assuming it was just Westbrook and the 2 first rounders.
No. I'm saying even if there was a little bit more in there. I still would be more concerned. I would be more concerned with the length of commitment afterwards than the idea of giving up a lot for an expensive dice roll. Because again, if you truly feel like Kyrie would make, you know, a healthy LeBron, healthy AD, healthy rest of the supporting cast still remaining, a front runner in this very wide open West, I think you can justify that to yourself. And also you can use that as justification to LeBron. If you then said, look, we are not comfortable with him beyond this season, but we are willing to do all of this for you. And then if you happen to get two titles out of it in the LeBron era, at that point, you have fulfilled a lot of what you set out to do in the first place. Nobody, I don't know if anybody else, I mean, we'll see if Dallas is willing to do it. I don't know if anybody else around the league is going to be willing to give that to Kyrie.
Right.
This offseason.
And the problem is, and I've heard some people say, and like a lot of people on the YouTube channel said, you know, just trade for him. And then, you know, no, the market won't be there. And then you can give him 2 years after that. He'll have to take it. That's not how you can enter into a relationship with Kyrie. If you want the deal to work, you have to show him that you are willing to, that you want him, and you're open and on board for that deal. You can't be the team that lies to the guy. And I just, if you trade for him, you need to be willing to either let him walk,
which I would
give him 4 years. And that's the choice you have to make. And like I said, I don't think it's a dice roll of like the long-term commitment. It is a commitment to the leopard to eat your face. And whether or not he will, we got tons of flack on this from a lot of people on the YouTube channel in the comments. I don't like Kyrie the person. I don't like the type of person who thinks they are so hyper enlightened that they see everything that the sheeple don't. I don't like a lot of the stuff that he traffics in. Does not make him a horrible person. He does a lot of redeeming things for the community and this. Kyrie isn't coming to LA to be my friend. My evaluation is based on what I think long-term is better for the Lakers, and it's going to blow up. And they clearly felt like 4 years was too much as opposed to two. And I think they are exactly right about that. And I don't blame you for thinking two was too much.
Whatever you think of Kyrie, you know, personality, worldview, whatever, to me, it's actually irrelevant in terms of how my apprehension about anything long-term, any type of commitment with Kyrie, because his worldview, while there are elements of it I don't agree with at all, it isn't really the issue. The issue is he's proven himself to be wholly unreliable. That track record of unreliability is why I think the Lakers were right to say we are not going to move heaven and earth and do whatever, even if whatever means beyond the period LeBron is going to be here.
Right.
The commitment needs to be,
you cannot make this trade without a willingness to do 4 years. You just can't. And, you know, we'll see what happens to Dallas, but the LeBron part of this is interesting because, you know, he, you know, after it was all done, you know, tweeted out, you know, maybe it's me, just like, why? And that is a message. Like, why can't we get something done here? Maybe I'm the problem. Maybe it's not the front office that's not making the trades. Somebody, that's why I think the Lakers as an organization who don't normally talk about these sorts of things, if they can avoid it, have been so open about like, hey, we offered this. Like, yeah, go put that out there. We offered this. We were willing to do this. We were not willing to do this. So there is not a lot of confusion. You know, the reporting has come down on this pretty quickly for some very reliable people. And I'm sure a lot of this comes directly from the Lakers. You know, LeBron's frustration is understandable. He's playing at an incredibly high level. He's responsible for some of these things. And, you know, I don't necessarily expect him to be like, well, I screwed it up, therefore, you know, but I get it. He's playing at an incredibly high level. He doesn't have that many years left. He's tired as all get out, which he said after the New Orleans game. And he's not on the same timeline as the Lakers. And the Lakers' money is not his money. You know, it's like, if you can give me a chance in this year and next year to run with Kyrie, and then you could tell me the whole thing's going to blow up. Yeah, that would suck, but that's more of a you problem than a me problem. I understand LeBron's approach here. I don't think anybody is necessarily doing anything wrong. What I am very fascinated by, though, now going forward, is what the market looks like and where the Lakers go from here, because they still have some assets, whether that's Westbrook, if you can find a home, whether that's Patrick Beverley, whether it's Lonnie Walker, whether it's those two picks that they control currently, that they could use to make moves now. And the market looks significantly different in a post-Kyrie trade world. So let's talk about that next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by Built Bar. If you're looking for a delicious treat, but you don't want all the fat and the calories, you got to try Built Bar. We're still dealing with the holiday hangover, all the stuff that you eat during. It's basically Thanksgiving through New Year's and, you know, Super Bowl's coming up. Like, you're going to be doing damage to yourself on top of the damage you've already done. But at the same time, eating's fun. You don't want to compromise taste. That's why Built Bars are the ticket. With Built, healthy actually tastes great. They're perfect for getting yourself back in shape again. And as always, covered in 100% real chocolate, great flavors like churro, peanut butter brownie, coconut almond. They taste deceptively like a candy bar, but only 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, 17 grams of protein. And now you don't have to wait around for a box. For years, we've been talking about ordering your Built Bars at Built.com, and it's still an option, but you can get them at your local Walmart in the pharmacy section. You can go to a Sam's Club. Just drop by either spot, pick up a box of assorted flavors. Get yourself some Built Bars. Enjoy.
So there's been some chatter, Andy, that, you know, that the Jazz are, you know, who have been presumed to be one of these teams that would be blowing it up and whatever it might be, are willing to make some moves here, whether that's Malik Beasley or Kelly Olynyk or Mike Conley, who's, I think they, you know, been willing to go Jared Vanderbilt, who would probably cost you a little something or other, because good young player, very good wing defender. These guys are increasing in value over the around the league. I don't know necessarily how the Lakers make something like that work. Supposedly they are asking for a ton, a first rounder for each of those guys, by some reports. And I don't know if I'd do that if I'm the Lakers, but here's the thing. This non-getting of Kyrie puts the Lakers back on a trajectory where their best opportunity to improve around LeBron and AD is kind of what they started with Hachimura, which is find 3 or 4 players and use, whether that's through cap space, whether that's through trades or whatever it might be, work on the depth of the rotation and finding skill sets rather than finding another star. Maybe Kyrie was worth ditching that plan for. Clearly they thought he was on some level. But that's the trajectory they're back on, because I don't see what star necessarily shakes loose and can come to LA for what they have to offer at this point. So to me, the trajectory really has been made much more clear going forward now that Kyrie really is off the market.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the stars go, if you're looking, I mean, you know, outside of the, you know, Bradley Beal, Damian Lillard just suddenly ask out, which Lillard, no chance in hell of it happening. Beal, I don't think it's going to happen, at least until this offseason. But, you know,
by the way, if you thought Joe Tsai was asking for a lot to get a trade to the Lakers, the amount of stuff Portland would demand to trade Damian Lillard to LA,
they're not going to do that. I mean, I'm just telling you, they're not. The Lakers do not have enough stuff to satisfy the 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th teams required to come up with some type of extraction that makes Portland able to stomach sending arguably the greatest Blazer ever to the Lakers, the team their fan base hates more than any other. I'm telling you, there's not enough bleep the Lakers can offer or cobble together to make that happen. No. We talked like a week or so ago about the idea of Fred VanVleet or Gary Trent Jr. Or, you know, I guess maybe if you could try to work out something to get both, you know, which would probably be pretty close to, you know, both picks, maybe Christie, maybe Reeves, something like that, because that would signal Toronto looking to go in more of a, if not a full rebuild, certainly looking more towards a semi-rebuild in
Utah. Oh, you're not getting those two guys without both picks and, you know, something. Right. Because, I mean, the other teams are going to be interested. You've made this point that I think is really good to reiterate. Part of the bind the Lakers are in is you can sit there and say, oh, the Lakers picks are better. They were going to offer two first round picks and Dallas only gave them one. And if you're a team that doesn't want just the picks, if you want young players, if you want cost control guys, like the Lakers just don't have that stuff to offer, because Reeves may be a young player and he may be good, but he's not cost controlled. You know, he's somebody that you have to turn around and sign this offseason to significantly more money than he's making now. Max Christie is a good young player. If I'm rebuilding team or a good team with a roster spot and a good culture, totally want that kid on my team and would love to let him grow. I think he's going to be a good NBA player, but he doesn't tilt deals. He doesn't keep a first rounder from having to be on the board. Maybe he adjusts protections a little. The Lakers don't have anything. And so, like, you, if you want a high salary guy, it's got to be Westbrook. And if they don't want Westbrook, you're SOL.
Patrick Beverley. If maybe Patrick Beverley and like Lonnie Walker together are enough.
But that gets you to about 18 and a half or right. 19. That doesn't
say get to you make the, right. To make the math work in whatever scenario, because if those two are not enough, you don't have any other options. Like, mm-hmm. You're done. You know, you've already traded Kendrick Nunn as your small but not veterans minimum salary. From there, it's either Russ, gargantuan money, Patrick Beverley and Lonnie Walker together, mid-size money, or nothing. Like, the Lakers just have very little optionality, and that's where guys like Reeves and Christie, even if other teams like them, become doubly complicated because they don't make enough money to really swing a deal from the economics of it. Like,
they don't make enough money this year. And the problem with this isn't, but you know what? This is an example of, and I am in no hurry to trade Austin Reeves. It doesn't do you a lot of good to undo your depth, if we're bringing one superstar. We've gone down this road before, we understand how it works, but if you're going to do it, this is another example of why the way they have the little mistakes. Austin Reeves is much more tradable as an asset to a team, has more value to a team if you can make the numbers work, as a guy who has one more year on his deal before he has to get paid. If it was like the Kuzma stuff, like it guys get less appealing when you know you're going to have to say, sure, they're cheap now, but he's going to cost you $10 million bucks next year. Maybe that's not a big deal to your team, but you know what's even better? Is a guy who's going to cost you 1.6 or whatever, like, and you get the value out of it. And so, that mitigates Reeves's trade value in situations like this, even if you were willing to throw him in, which I don't think the Lakers are in a hurry to do.
Jovan Buha reported that they were definitely not in a hurry to do that with the Nets, particularly, I think, exacerbated by the other stuff the Nets were asking for on top of it.
Yeah, it's just, they are in a real bind. And I think, I get LeBron's frustration. I get the Lakers fans' frustration with LeBron for being frustrated when sort of like, again, the hot dog meme, like we are trying to figure out but it's not entirely Brian, just LeBron's fault. It's not like the front office wasn't in on this too.
Well, interestingly, LeBron asked on Twitter when he was upset, presumably about Kyrie getting traded, maybe it's me. I was curious, so I put it out our Twitter feed at Cam Brothers poll. Is it LeBron? And there's still time to vote, so if people want to weigh in, but
polls are still open.
Yeah, but we heard at this point from like almost 1,600 people, 59% say no, it is not LeBron. 41% though say yes, it is LeBron. So it's, to your point, basically a weighted coin flip in terms of maybe it's me, maybe it is.
I think another deal is coming. I think the Lakers will make one more trade before the deadline, before Thursday. Well, you?
I hope they do, if for no other reason than, as I've said before, I think they would be best off looking to try to build next year's team now. And you can do that, letting Russ's deal eventually expire, but I think you're going to end up with less control over who you're doing this with, then if you can find players on the trade market that A, you know you want, B, are gettable right now through a trade, particularly with the complications that come with Rui Hachimura's cap hold and, you know, Austin Reeves and all that, his cap hold, all that different stuff. But just, I think you will get yourself a better selection and also just more time to build continuity for next year if you try to do this now.
Well, so you, as I hope it was, that they do. Yeah, as it was pointed out, at the very least, you can maximize Westbrook's money. You know, if you trade Westbrook at $47 million, you can bring in 50 something. I don't think there's a trade necessarily out there for Russ. I maybe make this clear. I think they're going to make a move. I don't think that move is going to involve Westbrook. So it means almost definitionally it's going to be more along the margins. But if you can turn, you can use, they're only going to have about 20 something million to play with, low 20s, once they presumably re-sign Hachimura. That doesn't get you, that gets you a couple, but you don't get as much for your money.
Any bit of depth that they can build for next year, unless they plan on re-signing Patrick Beverley and plan on re-signing Lonnie Walker, which neither of them feels like a given to me at all. If nothing else, you are better off using those guys' salary towards next year's depth if it can't be Russ.
If you can.
Otherwise, you're essentially taking about $60 to $70 million in salary and not really maximizing it this season or this offseason.
So much more obviously, the rumors are just going to keep coming out. The reporting is going to keep coming out through the day on Monday. The Lakers play Tuesday against Oklahoma City. LeBron 37 points away from Kareem. So that is a thing, obviously. It's going to be a busy week between now and Thursday. Make sure you're checking in the Locked On Lakers on YouTube. Make sure you're checking your podcast feed, because if stuff happens, we will record a show. That is how we've been doing it on both sides, not just YouTube, not just the audio. We're doing it on both ends there. So everybody gets the stuff. So it's going to be a crazy week, a fun week, an exciting week. One big thing happened already through the weekend, and it's going to lead to other things. Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers first listen of every day. Check it out on YouTube. See everybody on Tuesday.